guards, but by dynamite set to detonate on intrusion, and my pulse is monitored by an electrocardiograph wired to plastic explosives. If my heart stops beating, it will trigger an explosion within 15 seconds, blowing Damone and Alexis Parnell to pieces. Their lives depend on me alone and you.
Astonished, Lord watched the two hooded men push Alexis toward the van. The weekend anchor woman began speaking in her actress's crisp staccato. "The shocking film you've just witnessed was found with Colby Parnell early this morning after the terrorists left him bound but unharmed in the pasture of a Sonoma County farm. With it was an audio tape in which the so-called Phoenix threatened to execute Parnell's wife Alexis if he did not ensure its broadcast over SNI. And now the communications magnet and the feminist superstar of rock must wait with millions of others for the broadcast which Phoenix claims are coming. What makes this even more extraordinary is that the Parnells and Stacy Tarrant have suffered prior tragedy. The Parnells' son Robert vanished from their Tahoe cabin in a 1968 kidnapping, while Tarrant's close relationship with presidential aspirant James Kilcannon ended in his assassination here last June by Vietnam veteran Harry Carson." The phone rang. It was Cass, his legal assistant, demanding, "Have you seen that film? UPI keeps calling." "I've seen it. I hope this lunatic won't kill them." He heard her exhale. Stacy Tarrant left her number with the service. Lord looked out the window. Finally, he answered, "It's a joke, Cass. I called information. She's not listed, naturally, but it's a Malibu exchange. That's where she's been holed up since you and Harry drove her into exile, as People magazine would have it." Lord hung up, then picked up the receiver again and dialed the number. "Hello?" A woman answering on the second ring. "Stacy?" "Yes." "This is Tony Lord." Silence. "I wasn't sure you'd call." Lord recognized the voice now, smoky and a little low. It was so bizarre that in his discomfort he almost laughed. "It really is you." "It's really me. I want to see you." June 2nd, the previous year. Lying in bed, Stacy Tarrant felt a stranger in her own city. Jamie dressed in silent concentration. With the drapes closed, their suite was a collage of all her other mornings on the road. Running for president had begun to seem so much like rock and roll that she was living in a time warp. In 15 hours, for the first time in a year, she would face 20,000 people she already feared. "Fuck this," she announced, put on her glasses, stalked naked to the window, and jerked open the drapes. A dawn-lit haze made the tangled freeways look like the map of a mirage. Turning from the mirror, Jamie bantered, "It's Los Angeles, all right, but what does it mean?" Stacy smiled. "I'm more curious about where we're going." Behind her, she felt him summoning Senator James Kilcannon, slim and tailored and quick. On a magical mystery tour of Los Angeles, San Diego, San Francisco, Sacramento, and San Francisco again, for Alexis Parnell's cocktail party and the rock and roll spectacular which will finance next Tuesday's triumph. "I hope." The last words, closer and softer, were followed by a kiss on her neck. "As if my boyish charm weren't sufficient, you're about to make me the Democratic nominee for president." They had met 4 years earlier when her third album was number one and her time was so consumed by writing and touring that Stacy had wondered if she'd killed the rest of her. And then Damone had called to announce with exaggerated reverence, "Senator James Kilcannon wants to meet you." That strangers called because they both were famous no longer startled or impressed her. "He wants money, right?" "He wants you to sing. The way the law works, you can only give $1,000, but by packing an arena, you can raise $400,000 more." "But why would I want to? Should I tell him that?" She thought a moment. "I will." But James Kilcannon had surprised her. Stacy had been used to meeting politicians so determined to project warmth that it felt like she'd been mugged. But an air of amusement about Kilcannon suggested that he held part of himself back. This hint of complexity had appealed to her. His hazel eyes had an iris so much wider than the normal that they seemed to absorb everything around him. Yet his fine, sculpted face made him look impossibly young to be president. "You're wondering what I want from you," he'd said. "Besides 30 seconds as a gossip item." They were having lunch at Harry's bar.